The following is a CSPN Media podcast presentation.
Welcome to Heel Heat. It's your boys, Dwayne and Sean, the Libra Icon, slash actually Dwayne. I'm mainly on the Libra Icon, so follow me there as well as actually Dwayne, because if something ever happens and, you know, Twitter be tripping,
Sent to Twitter jail.
If I get sent to Twitter jail or Twitter tries to put me out in the streets, I'd actually Dwayne, but I'm also on these Twitter streets as a Libra Icon. So follow me there, Instagram, all that jazz. I am with my co-host slash best friend in the whole wide world. I am with Sean Shaolin Shogun M.A., a.k.a. Yep, yep. Jackson McCoy, a.k.a. Yo. Mr. Senor Love Daddy. Think I did not see that. But yes, so we are here. We are back. We do apologize. You know, we are working individuals, so we have bills to pay. We have jobs. We have careers. We have lives. So, but we're back. We're going to try to be better, more consistent. We're getting the schedule worked out, right?
No doubt.
All right, cool. All right, so I'm going to turn it over to Sean. With the show topic, what we got here today, man?
Man, I'm ready for this, man. I'm ready to shit all over this storyline. Excited because today we're going to be talking about the injury to Stone Cold Steve Austin in 1999 and the subsequent return storyline, which saw Rikishi, of all people, be revealed as the superstar who hit that motherfucker with a car. So exciting times for us, because this was some stupid shit, bro.
Very stupid.
You
I
know,
I sat through this. Honestly.
Dude, like, going back, watching this recently on the network, because I've been watching old Raw episodes. So I'm right around WrestleMania 17 right now. So I just saw this, and man, just seeing where everything was around the time Stone Cold came back, and even just looking back at the possibilities of who it could have been to make this shit storm a little better, just blew my mind that they didn't pivot and go another direction. So I'm really excited to get into it and get in the weeds. What we're going to do first is we're just going to go back to the middle of 1999, set the landscape, tell you how things were going in the WWE, and then we'll get into the storyline. You ready, bro?
I'm ready. Let's get into it. Let's do it.
Cool. So by the middle of 1999, we're deep into the Attitude Era, the Monday Night Wars. At this point, WWE is winning constantly in the rating, and the gap was wide. For example, if you want to look at the ratings for Raw versus Monday Nitro from WCW in November 1999, November the 1st, Raw got a 5.9, Nitro was 3.2. On November the 8th, Raw was a 5.4. Nitro was the 3.4. On November 15th, Raw was a 6.3, and Nitro was a 3.1. So they're right around. Go ahead.
I'm sorry. You know why Nitro was? You want to know why Nitro was bad? It all started back in January, and we're gonna get into this eventually. And I cannot wait for.
Oh, hell yeah! Yes.
Wait for that.
We gonna get to that. That finger punk of doom is coming very soon.
Cannot wait, because I think that will probably be the most profanity laced heel heat episode ever, and I cannot wait. But yeah, that's really for me.
That's where it started.
That's where it started. That's when I was really over WCW. I think I really stopped watching a lot of Nitro. Like, I used to watch Nitro quite a bit, but when that shit happened, I really stopped.
I think it's safe to say that me and Dwayne were part of that. What was it, like 600,000 people who flipped the channel when Tony Schiavone said that Mick Foley was winning the title? Yeah. I was like, fuck this.
Right, exactly. Yeah.
You know? And just because, you know, living where we're from in Charlotte, man, this being WCW and NWA country, man, I try to hold on to WCW as long as I could, but dude, man, they just,
it was excruciating.
It was painful to watch. But going back to an earlier point, and this might be something that I rip off on in a closing segment in the next week or so. Watching 3-hour Nitros is kind of better than watching a 3-hour Raw right now, which is scary as shit to say.
Wow. That's interesting.
Yeah. So jumping right back in, Stone Cold Steve Austin was probably at the peak of his career at this point. Although The Rock had grown tremendously in his popularity, Austin was still the meal ticket for the WWF. At Survivor Series 1999, Austin was scheduled to compete for the WWF Championship against champion Triple H and The Rock in a triple threat match. Austin had been experiencing severe back pain and numbness in his limb, which were caused by a bone spur, on the C4 vertebrae, putting pressure on his spine. Of course, the injury was due to years of playing football and participating in professional wrestling, but it was mostly aggravated during his 1997 SummerSlam match for the Intercontinental Championship against the late, great Owen Hart. Everyone knows the scene in that match. Hart picked Austin up for that sit-down power driver. Unfortunately, Austin's head was dangling unprotected when Hart dropped him right on his head.
That was
shit, dude. Ugh. I thought Austin was dead. I was like, no way he's getting up from that.
The fact that I think when you finish, there's two Austin moments that really, really were iconic and made me a fan for life. The submission match against Bret Hart earlier that year. And the fact that he finished the match and won, even though he had to relinquish the title. Yeah. But the finish the match, though, literally jelly, was freaking amazing. Yeah.
I mean, everybody, even Austin, will tell you that was the worst roll-up in the history of professional wrestling. But to his credit, he will say it's either lay there and stop the match and kill whatever momentum that I have, or, you know, making chicken soup out of shit. You know what I mean? Like, I can't do much, but let me go ahead and get this win. So when I do come back, I can still be seen as this badass, as Stone Cold Steve Austin. No matter what you do to me, I'm going to overcome. So, yeah, man, I agree with you. Those are two moments that really stood out for me. I don't think too many people could have even operated in that situation. Two moments that stick out to me as far as toughness in WWE history would be Stone Cold Steve Austin, 1997, Owen Hart at SummerSlam, and then Triple H tearing his quad.
Woo, like, when it rolled up his thigh. Woo!
And finished that match. Oh, man. You know how long that match had to go left? That match didn't end a minute or so after that happened.
That was a good
minute.
It was a good 25-30 minutes.
Thank you. And Triple H, for good or bad, I might be on the minority, but I don't give a fuck. I think it's true. I think he's done way more good than bad. Tremendous respect from that standpoint. So definitely
when he came back for, I mean, cut you off. when he came back for that, when he came back at MSG.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
Oh, man, the pop that he had in the Garden.
I don't care what anybody said. That's still the biggest pop I've ever heard.
Yeah.
Just off somebody coming out, you know, that's a bigger pop that I've heard Austin, Rock, John Cena get at MSG. But I digress. So jumping back in, due to severity of that injury, the decision was made for Austin to be pulled from that Survivor Series event and undergo surgery. And that cast doubt on whether he would ever return to the ring as an in-ring performer. Jim Ross, who was the play-by-play announcer at that time for Monday Night Raw, and also served as the vice president for talent relations. In regards to Austin's injury and surgery, Ross said, "They think the surgery will relieve the pressure on his spinal cord, and Steve will at least have a fighting chance to resume what he's been doing. Even after the surgery, the doctor thinks if it would be better for him not to wrestle, there's no doubt in our minds that he would still assume a huge role on our television broadcast." So, look, I'll ask this really quick before we continue. Austin couldn't have come back physically from this. Do you see if there was a space on the roster for him to perform week in and week out just as an on-air character?
Not at that time. I would say I wouldn't be able to see it at that time. I mean you could probably have him like some kind of like counter to the Mr. McMahon's diabolical evolution. And they kind of still kind of have that Austin McMahon rivalry intensity. But it would not have been the same. Because, you know, he was, like you said at the beginning, he was at the peak, and that, I mean, even if he had a huge role, it wouldn't have been the same. People want him back in the ring.
Definitely.
People will want him, especially at that time. Like I think, had he not come back, the ratings might have swung back the other way.
Yeah. Yeah, that would definitely open the door for WCW to capitalize on something. I agree. I think if he wouldn't have been able to come back physically, you'd have really had to massage the situation to determine when the best time would be to bring him back. At that time, they had the commissioner role with Mick Foley. Watching Raw and SmackDown back, I didn't realize that Mick Foley run as commissioner lasted less than a year. It felt longer. So, and really, you know, it really did. And I don't see a way Austin could have fit into that. I really don't see him as an authority figure. I don't know. It's kind of funny.
Especially when he's anti-authority.
Yeah. That would have been just a total switch, which was, You know, turning the channel to TNT. What TNT was doing with WCW at the time was that you had Ric Flair in an authoritative role, which made absolutely no sense. And Ric Flair was standing in the middle of the ring as the president of WCW, preaching on how he used to break the law, but now he's going to enforce the rules. I don't want to see that shit.
Right. You know, how's the dirtiest player in the game going to be like, "I got to enforce the law"?
Yeah. But
can you imagine Austin trying to enforce rules when he broke every single... He was anti-establishment, so no.
Negative. So, yeah. It would have been a while before you could have fit him back in. Unless... he's always gifted on the mic. Maybe you could have put him in a commentator's role if he would have been okay with that. I actually think that's something that he would have been able to excel at that time. Like I said, I don't think it would have been the right time, but maybe, you know, sometime down the line after WCW was gone and it was just them and, you know, they went to the brand split, maybe bring him and JR on Raw I think people would tune in to Raw just to hear Stone Cold commentate.
Right.
I would have. And then, you know, he could have had.
And he would have shut up King real quick, too.
Yes. Yes. Or, you know, hell, put him on SmackDown and smack the shit out of Michael Cole every now and then.
I'm always here for Michael Cole getting smacked.
Always there for Michael Cole getting smacked, flip, power slam, whatever. F5 with the shoe popped off.
That was so awesome.
All right. So Awesome's out of there. Can't compete. Now the WWF has to figure out how to pull Stone Cold out of the match and write him off television. But they can't simply say Austin is injured and can't compete. No, they can't. They had to go full WWF and hit that motherfucker with a car. Like, why? Yeah, you got to hit the motherfucker with a car.
Right.
That's murder.
Right.
We murdered him. Just simply say he's not. Look, that always bugged me, man. Just say the guy injured and he can't compete. At this point in time, I feel like Stone Cold had enough smoke. Maybe not in 97. He was just getting the momentum and he wanted to save face. But in 99, I mean, you could have just blamed it on an off-camera attack. But hitting the motherfucker with a car, a little too much for me. After the Big Show faced the Big Boss Man, Prince Albert, Midian, and Viscera, in a god awful, yeah, rest in peace, but rest in peace to that match, because Jesus,
yeah, that match was
god awful Survivor Series. That was a Survivor Series elimination match. Big Show by himself versus those four, terrible. But after this match, Triple H is interrupts an interview with Austin, which calls Austin to chase Triple H to the backstage area, and that's where the car drove up and ran down Austin at high speed. Then you would see Vince McMahon blame Triple H and DX for the attack, and they deny the involvement. They show Austin being loaded into the ambulance. And then announced Big Show as the replacement in the match. And Big Show would actually go on to pin Triple H in the main event to become the WWF champion and just have a hideous run as WWF champion. The next time we would see Austin would be the SmackDown before Backlash 2000. At that time, Triple H was the WWF champion, and he was set to defend the title against The Rock in the main event. Triple H had Vince McMahon in his corner. The Rock was scheduled to have Stone Cold Steve Austin in his corner, but there was question, where would Stone Cold's loyalty be? So Stone Cold showed up at the SmackDown before Backlash, cut a promo backstage in what looked like a construction vehicle. And when we zoomed out, that's exactly what it was. They zoom out, Austin drops the rig and blows up the DX Express charter bus, which is one of the iconic images from early SmackDown.
Yeah.
Austin appeared at the Backlash pay-per-view attacking DX in the main event. Because he was recovering from surgery and you could tell that he wasn't in his best shape, he wasn't allowed to perform any moves, couldn't Stone Cold stun anyone. So he hit the ring with a chair in hand, gave the DX group the business with the chair. The Rock goes on to a rock bottom, people's elbow, pins Triple H to become your new WWF champion, and at the end, Stone Cold drags the burnt up Express bus into the arena, toasts The Rock as the new champion, and we fade to black. So that's where we are, man. So what did you think about their utilization of Stone Cold Steve Austin while he was out for injury? After Survivor Series, we didn't hear anything from him until right before Backlash.
Well, first off, when you go back to the That car had been going at least 50 in that damn area. Wasn't this in Greensboro? Wasn't this
yes.
in Greensboro? Yes, it was. Okay. I knew that looks that area looked familiar. Yeah, so that car really came at a high speed. Austin did, in hindsight, Austin really did a good job launching himself and protecting himself so he doesn't, you know, seriously get hurt because this is a fucking car we're talking about. So
he's doing that already, with an already fucked up neck.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? And that was my issue with it. Like, we know he's out. He has this serious neck injury. It's going to be out minimum 10 to 12 months. Could be forever. And our solution to write him off TV is to hit him with a motherfucking car.
Right.
Like, that could have did more damage.
Exactly. Yeah, which is why I'm just like, props to you, man, because props to Stone Cold, because that just didn't make no freaking sense.
Made no sense.
Yeah, so, you know, going fast forwarding, it was awesome to see him pop up, you know, because, you know, we haven't seen him in such a long time. I remember being in my room watching SmackDown. I think this was on UPN at the time. Mm-hmm. So yeah, watching SmackDown and seeing this, you know, of course, the DX Express, you know. This was also around the time where WWF Aggression was out. So
yes.
DX was coming out to run DMC's.
Yes.
The Kings. And so, yeah.
Let me just interject right now.
Yeah.
WWE is so lame. They cut that out on the network.
Trash.
It's completely trash.
That is trash.
Look, go ahead. I just wanted to point that out.
Wow. That's disrespectful. How dare you disrespect Run DMC? Yeah, so at this point, and this was heel DX on top of that. So
mm-hmm.
I was really digging this heel DX stable and the dominance, basically McMahon Helmsley faction, but I might have been. No, I think that was later on. But anywho, so it comes back. You know, yeah, we do see he's a little on the hefty side, a little out of shape. But you know, it was good to see The Rock, Triple H. I mean, this rivalry between those two was already one of the best rivalries in the late '90s and mm-hmm. early 2000s. So. Adding the element of Austin made it even better. And so, so up to this stage, everything, it was just good seeing, you know, first off, getting the title off the Big Show. that, like you said, that was a shitty ass run as a WWE champion, even though that was like his first title at the time.
It was. Yeah. If anybody doesn't remember, I'm pretty sure nobody really remembers much of his reign as WWF champion. But this point, when Big Show was WWF champion, that's when he had his feud with the Big Boss Man. And
that culminated with that ugly-ass match, didn't it?
Yeah, and that also is when Big Show's dad died.
Oh, yeah.
And the whole funeral thing where Big Show is riding on a fucking casket.
Oh, God.
Everybody out there, if you have not listened to the Big Boss Man episode of Something to Wrestle with Bruce Prichard, please go listen to that. Bruce will tell you all about the ins and outs of them filming the day of at the cemetery, filming that angle, how it's a cemetery that they used previously, but after this angle, yeah, they wasn't able to go back. And who can blame the cemetery. That was some god awful shit.
Right. Disrespectful shit too.
Yes.
Disrespectful
shit. It's one thing to film some Undertaker vignettes and stuff like that, where Undertaker just talking
and digging holes,
not really doing something, but we talking about causing a real deal scene. While other people are at the cemetery visiting their loved ones.
Man, greed. Man driving across the cemetery with another man via that's ugly. That's ugly. Ugh. All right, but yeah, that's my thoughts on it. At this point, I think this was definitely, so far, like I said, it was stupid to have him hit with the car. I like the return, of course. He can't really do much of anything because of his injury anyway, but allowing The Rock to become champ and the god-awful cemetery scene. Yeah, we can continue now.
Yeah, I think it was good just because we haven't heard from Stone Cold. And, The Rock had gotten really, really big during Austin's time away. And it was just good to see Austin back. You know what I mean? Just, hey, I'm still out here. I'm still a thing. Remember me. I'm still that badass motherfucker. Show you what I'm going to do when I come back. So it was a good thing to, keep Austin's name fresh. So nobody would forget about him. People weren't going to forget about him, period. But I think it's good for people to show up every now and then. When they're injured. That's probably one of my criticisms about promotions in the past. Unless you're just going to do a complete repackage of somebody, I think is, if somebody's out long term, I think there's different ways that you can, keep them, out there so somebody can see them. When Triple H showed his car, he actually wasn't on Raw or SmackDown or any pay-per-views from that time until he came back from MSG, but he was on a very much talked about episode of Tough Enough during the first season, and then he did some of the syndicated shows as well, so Triple H was still around. You could see him, and that just kind of was just like, yo, man, I miss Triple H. And I think, it's that little bug that stays in people's head and helps to build that anticipation for them to come back. Like, I was enjoying The Rock being the number one guy firmly. Because at this time, The Undertaker was gone, too. The Undertaker wouldn't come back until the next month in May. So you didn't have Austin. You didn't have Taker. Triple H was, The Rock was that guy. Triple H was that top heel with the McMahon-Helmsley faction. So good for their elevation, but good to say, hey, Austin's still around and coming back soon. So speaking of his comeback,
this is when talent was written properly and utilized properly, and this is some of the things that I definitely do miss in the current product, but I'll get into that later.
I guess we both have some hot takes about the current product today. Fast forward to the fall of 2000, it was announced that Austin returned at the Unforgiven pay-per-view in September and launched his own investigation into who hit him with the motherfucking car.
Wasn't Unforgiven in Charlotte in 2000?
I don't think so. I'm not sure.
No, that was 99.
99. Okay. See, we used to have stuff in Charlotte, man.
Right.
We don't get it like that. Right. Austin is interviewed by Kevin Kelly when he comes into the building, and he threw Kelly into a wall. After the next match, Kurt Angle runs into Stone Cold and Steve Austin. Angle introduces himself and offers Austin an honorary gold medal.
Oh, God.
Austin hits him in the face.
Naturally.
basically. After the next match, the Austin and The Rock come face to face, but they're interrupted by another random person who's attacked by Austin. Edge and Christian defend the tag titles against Matt Hardy and Jeff Hardy after this segment. And after this match, Austin enters a room and Stephanie McMahon is in there. Stephanie offers Austin the hat that Austin was wearing when he got hit with the motherfucking car. And Stephanie tries to convince Austin that neither she nor Triple H was the culprit. Austin refuses to believe her and leaves the room. The next time we would see Austin would be after the Triple H Kurt Angle match. Shane McMahon returned after not being seen since SummerSlam and blames Steve Blackman for the attack on Austin.
Name I heard in years.
Yeah, man. Hey, man. Steve Blackman had that hardcore theme music, man. Don't play Steve Blackman's music just randomly, bro. I'm gonna go home. That thump on his theme song, man. I just wanted Steve Blackman around so I could hear his music.
Right.
But Blackman comes to the ring, but before he could speak, Austin finally hits the ring. And with his brand new and my favorite version of his theme song, that Disturbed rock entrance theme that he should still be using to this day. I love that theme. That makes the first appearance. And he hits a stunner on Steve Blackman. Austin and Shane celebrate, drink a beer. And then Austin gives him Shane, pronouns pal, not one, not two, but three stunners. And that's all we see from Stone Cold Steve Austin from the night. So Dwayne, Stone Cold hasn't been seen for 10 months, minus that appearance on SmackDown and Backlash. Yeah. What you say, man? Was this a good way to bring him back at Unforgiven 2000?
I mean, it sure was. I mean, you bring him back at a pay-per-view.
Mm-hmm. You
bring him back in a hardcore wrestling city, Philadelphia.
Mm-hmm.
You set it up where he's already thinking his Triple H, as he thought already. Of course, Kurt Angle and his douchey character at the time. Always good to just slap Kurt Angle in the face.
Yes.
because he was a real douche at the time. So, at this point, the build-up was really good.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, of course, you have to, poor Steve Blackman. The man never said anything as it was. And the one chance we actually get to hear the man speak, he gets a stunner.
Blame Shane McMahon.
Yes, which is why it was great to see him give not one, not two, but three stunners. And Shane does sell the stunner very well. He doesn't oversell it like The Rock. He goes flopping all over the ring like a fish out of water. But the build-up was really good. And so at this point, it was really, really good to see Stone Cold back. It was refreshing, like I said. Perfect time to do it at a pay-per-view event in the hardcore city, you know, because you got those hotbeds. New York, Chicago, Philly. So it was a good job doing it right there. And so, yeah, I had no problems with the build-up at this point. So the build-up is good, but it goes a little downhill from here.
Yeah, I tend to agree. I think it was right to bring him back on a pay-per-view, make the audience pay for it. So it was better to have this on a pay-per-view than to give it away for free.
Right.
On Raw or on SmackDown. Only part that I had a problem with, it was just too many backstage stuff for me.
Yeah, but much like now.
Yeah. It was just like after every match, mostly, we're backstage with Austin walking the halls. Now, I don't know about you, but you know, I know we talk about we can't take wrestling seriously. It's hard to, you know, you shouldn't try to make logic out of wrestling. And but some things, we want a little bit logic. You know, it can't be all the way out of this world. You know what I mean? Right. Pay-per-view, roughly 2.5 hours, a little under 3 hours.
Mm-hmm.
I just don't believe Austin would have spent that whole time walking around that backstage area, bro.
Yeah, I mean, when you put it like that, I kind of see what you're saying.
You know what I mean? Like, that's the only part that I had a problem with. Like, it's just unwritten. Now, if they would have just showed, you know how you would have a 2 hour Raw. Whew, remember those days? Glorious days. You know, 2 hours Raw. Show would have been on for like 40 minutes. And then you cut to the backstage and then you see Austin walking in. I would have more so liked to see a situation where the pay-per-view would have been going for a while. Maybe the pay-per-view was half over, and then and that's when you see Stone Cold arrive at the building. He comes in, he gets settled. You can have a couple of backstage moments with him. A few of these that I talked about, I feel like you could have did it in one segment.
Yeah, where
just him walking the halls. Like he walks the halls. He is stopped by Kevin Kelly. Kevin Kelly is the first person to talk to him and try to interview him. Stone Cold says a few words, punches Kelly in the face, and he keeps walking. Then the angle. Angle introduces himself. You know what I'm saying? Like you could have put some of those together. So it's just not like match. Now we're back to Austin. Match. Now we're back to Austin. Match. Mm-hmm. Now we're back to Austin. You know what I mean? That just kind of went on too long for me. And like Stone Cold's character to me doesn't do that.
Yeah, it's more like I'm a man of action. This is what the fuck I want to do. Let me get this done right the fuck now.
Mm-hmm. Like I'm walking the halls for a few minutes. If I don't get the answer that I'm looking for, then I'm taking it to the ring. Somebody gonna get their ass whooped.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I mean? So I like it. Like that it was on a pay-per-view. I like the concept of what they were trying to do. I just wish some of the pieces were put together better.
Better, right. I agree with that. Didn't look at it like that, but that's a good point.
So, as Dwayne was saying, now it gets bad.
Really bad.
So, picking up on the next Raw, the investigation continues. Now, let's say something about this investigation on who hit Stone Cold Steve Austin. It felt like it took forever for them to reveal who did it. They beat the hell out of this thing. Austin interfering on matches on Raw and SmackDown, just attacking people left and right. You know what I mean? I'm used to Stone Cold attacking people and it having purpose. Not for him just to come out and hit the ring and stun people for no reason, which with the repetitiveness of it, it seemed like this is what he's doing. So much so, on the October 5th edition of Raw, Commissioner Mick Foley suspended Stone Cold Steve Austin and took over the investigation and said Austin would not be eligible to return until the culprit was found. And this was after Stone Cold had given Foley a stunner himself the week before. On the October 9th, episode of Raw with both The Rock and Rikishi in the ring, Foley comes down to the ring and continues to play on the suspicion that The Rock was the individual who ran down Stone Cold Steve Austin. Now, they had been going back and forth. You know, Rock had already denied it the night that Austin came back at Unforgiven. But then the story out there was that it was The Rock's rental car. Which I went back and watched SummerSlam. Like, nobody said shit about that being The Rock's rental car. So they just kind of made that up.
Right.
To add suspicion. So even though The Rock had denied it, we're still using this whole it's The Rock's car like nobody steals cars. So he's your number one suspect. Swerve. While Foley is making accusations that seems like he is still talking about The Rock being the culprit, he swerves us all by accusing Rikishi as the individual who hit Stone Cold Steve Austin with the car. The reasoning that he accuses Rikishi is Foley had asked Too Cool member Scotty Too Hotty what they were doing that night in Detroit, and Too Cool, both Scotty Too Hotty and Grandmaster Sax, I don't want to leave him out, rest in peace, had mentioning that they had been partying in Detroit at the time. Foley soon realized that Rikishi hadn't made his debut at that time. Pause. What the fuck? Why would Rikishi not have made his debut at that time be a reason to accuse him? If he didn't make his debut, like, I would question if he was even there.
Right. I did not get that at all. I really was confused. I'm like, huh?
And then, I guess because we're not supposed to remember stuff, when Rikishi Fatu debuted, he wasn't associated with Too Cool. So why would he be partying in Detroit with Too Cool the Survivor Series? Make no sense. No sense at all. But I digress.
Zero.
But I digress. Because we ain't supposed to remember shit like that or make sense out of it.
Of course not. How dare us be logical?
Rikishi admits that he was the one that ran Stone Cold Steve Austin down with the car and delivered the famous line, "He did it for The Rock. He did it for the people." That his hilarious in 2020 as it was in 1999 when he said it. Bruh, your cousin was already a multi-time WWE champion. Why did he need you to do that? It made no fucking sense. But let me keep on going, because we're going to have a minute to shit on this. So Foley then announces that Austin and Rikishi would face each other in a no-holds-barred match at the October No Mercy pay-per-view. Stone Cold Steve Austin returns to Detroit on the October 16th episode of Raw. He was being interviewed by Michael Cole when Rikishi interrupts him on the Titantron, telling Austin to come fight him at the same parking lot in the arena where he ran Austin over. When Austin exited the arena and got to the parking lot, he couldn't find Rikishi. But when Austin got closer, Rikishi drove up into some boxes, attempting to run Stone Cold Steve Austin over again. Really? Sorry, Miz. But really? This really? Is what we're doing now? Look, man. Look.
That's all I can say right now.
Look. Oh, man, let's just keep on going, man. I just can't do it. On the October 19th episode of SmackDown, Austin was being interviewed by Jim Ross. Rikishi appeared in the garage of the arena and smashed up Stone Cold's truck and was found out by Jonathan Coachman. Shout out to Coach.
Hard hit. Back break.
I was waiting on you to do that.
The coach is one of the coolest dudes around. Shout out to him too. Yeah, man.
So Austin sees his truck being destroyed Then he saw a car spin out, and believing that Rikishi was in it, Austin gives chase. But no, no, no. Rikishi wasn't in that car. Rikishi was still in the arena. And after Austin is gone, Rikishi appears and attacks JR.
Of course he does.
Ordered to leave the arena by Mick Foley. And No Mercy, Austin and Rikishi fought in a no-holds barred match, which was deemed a no contest after Austin was arrested by the Albany police when he tried to run Rikishi over with a car. Bruh. This is some bad shit right here, man.
This is stupid.
What is going on?
This is okay,
what in the Vince McMahon, Bruce Pritchard, Pat Patterson shit is going on, man? They better than this. What is this shit, is Dwayne? Horrible. Tell me.
This was a bullshit. That's what it was. Like, this was trash. This was uber trash. Like, the buildup was fine, and then it just went. It's like it fell off a cliff.
Oh, yo. Know, if it jumped the shark, like, if it didn't jump the shark during the investigation, it jumped the shark immediately once Rikishi admitted that it was him. Because I remember
thinking about the Rock.
Like, yo, okay, I'm just ready for this to be over now.
Once he said, "I did it for the Rock," I was okay. It's over. Cancel this.
He's like, "Yo, I'm supposed to take you seriously now. Like, now you're gonna go from, you know, the dancing big man with the thong up his butt to coming out to 'I'm a bad man.' That music. I'm supposed to take you serious now." Like,
I sure
did. You did it for the people.
He didn't do it for my ass. Hell no.
Hell no. I ain't benefit.
Right. Well, Morocco's like, already the people's champ. Long before.
People of color, hit up the Heel Heat Pod Twitter. Tell us, did you benefit from Rikishi doing it for the people? I did.
It had no effect on me.
No. All it did to me was get Rikishi's ass whooped.
Right.
He got his ass whooped that night. Then he continued to get his ass whooped.
Mm-hmm.
So Rikishi damn near gets killed during his match with Austin. But then he reappears during the main event, interfering in the Kurt Angle Rock WWF Championship match. Rikishi starting attacking Kurt Angle. Rock and Angle then returned to the ring where Rock hit Angle with the Rock Bottom. Attempted a pinfall. Angle kicked out at two. Rikishi came in, tried to do a splash on Angle in the ring, but the Rock also got splashed. Rikishi tried to hit the Savate Kick on Angle, who ducked and hit the Rock. I mean, dude, you done fucked up a few times. This dude comes back, tries to hit another Savate Kick. Angle ducks again. Hits the Angle Slam. Pins the Rock. New WWF Championship. The next night on Raw, Rikishi apologizes to The Rock for costing him the WWF title, saying that it was an accident, but The Rock didn't forgive him. Rock gave his ass Rock Bottom on that shit. Shit about to get even more messy. On the October 26th episode of SmackDown, Austin was hit with a wrench as he was headed to the ring to attack Rikishi after Rikishi's match with Too Cool. Austin managed to make it to the ring, but was assaulted by Rikishi. On the October 30th episode of Raw, Austin defeated Rikishi in a cage match. Later that night, Rikishi attacked The Rock after Rock won his number one contenders match against Chris Jericho. Following the attack, Rikishi revealed that The Rock knew about the attack. So we're doing this shit again. We're clouding suspicion on The Rock again. He beat this dead horse before. Now we're going back to it.
The dead horse woke up, said, "I'm already dead, and y'all are still gonna beat on the poor thing."
Rikishi said he gave the keys. he was given the keys to the truck to run down Austin by The Rock. On the November 2nd episode of SmackDown, Rock was costed a shot at the WWF Championship by Rikishi. Austin took on Angle and Rikishi in a handicap match on the November 6th episode of Raw. Angle and Rikishi teamed up on Austin throughout the match until Triple H made the save, forcing Angle and Rikishi to retreat. Here goes the serve again. Triple H attacks Austin with the sledgehammer and reveals himself to be the mastermind behind the whole thing. As a result, Big Foley announces on the November 9th episode of SmackDown that Triple H would wrestle Austin at Survivor Series and Rikishi would face The Rock at Survivor Series. So, dude, my head hurt. You know what I mean? There was going to be some pauses in this review, but this is some shit, and I wanted to get through it. Like, what the fuck, bro? Like, I'm over this Triple shit. H was going to be the person, which I know they didn't know. But, like, you
could have. He knew this already.
You could have saved a whole bunch of shit. Just jumped to start it with Triple H.
Which he did. That's the thing.
The first person he went to was Triple H. And now we're going back to Triple H. After the Rikishi shit didn't work.
This is stupid.
That's why they did it. And that's why, you know, that's why they did it, because the Rikishi shit wasn't working. Like, people were booing Rikishi, but they weren't booing Rikishi because they were upset that he hit Stone Cold Steve Austin. They were booing Rikishi because this was some bullshit.
They were, the intelligence was being insulted at that point.
Exactly. So what were your thoughts? What were you thinking when they went back to Triple H on this?
Duh. We knew this, like, the worst thing you can do as a promotion is insult the fans' intelligence.
Thank you.
WCW did this with the finger poke of doom. When Kevin Nash laid down for Hulk. Oh my God, I'm getting an aneurysm thinking about this shit again. Let me get off that.
Take it off, bro.
Okay. Whew. Anyway. I think they started to realize, like you said, when fans start booing because this shit is stupid, that's when they realize, oh shit, we are insulting the intelligence of the fan. They know too much. Let's just go ahead and do what was originally planned all along. So
it just didn't make sense.
None of it made sense at all.
No reason that they could come up with, like, if you're gonna do something like this, and like, so here's the deal. Fuck what happened after Survivor Series. We're not gonna go into that. We're just gonna do what we do on the Hill Heat podcast. We're gonna switch gears and we're gonna tell everyone how we would have booked this feud. Not the feud, excuse me, the actual storyline of who hit Stone Cold Steve Austin. So, fuck what Triple H and Austin did next. Fuck what Rikishi, because Rikishi didn't do shit after this.
Right.
Like, this, like, Rikishi, I've heard Bruce Prichard say that they would go to arenas for Raw and SmackDown. Of course, Austin and The Rock would get your biggest pops, but your next, your third best pop of the night would consistently be Rikishi and Too Cool. Everybody wanted to wait to that moment when they were dancing.
Mm-hmm.
Like, the pops you heard were in this order. He'll say it. Austin, Rock, Rikishi, Too Cool, and then Devon get the tables.
That's pretty dope.
So they ruined him because I'll tell you this, I challenge anybody, and you can hit me up at Heel Heat Pie. You can hit me up at Shaolin Shogun MA. The MA is because I got my master's, motherfuckers.
No.
Tell me you remember one thing that Rikishi did after this run. I challenge you to. And because I know shit, I can tell if you looked it up. So don't play me. But I challenge you. Like, they ruined Rikishi. Like, it was over for him. So, Dwayne, I'm going to turn it over to you, bruh. We can't make sense out of what WWF did with this storyline, but we can put some sense in it ourselves, because what we would have done would have made perfect sense. So, brother, how would you book the Stone Cold Steve Austin injury storyline?
By not having him run over with the car to start out with, so we're going to scrap the car. I mean, can we just had a prop or something? Just hit him with a had like a mass assailant hit him with a pipe or something, like a prop that would have just where he would have just sold it.
Dude, you could have chopped him in the back of the head with a pipe.
Yeah.
Neck injury. Okay. Bam.
Yeah. There you go. Off the TV. You know. And, you know, maybe have him get struck with a lead pipe, hit him in the back of the neck a few times. He sells it. He's down. He's off TV. Cool. Okay. So then, we would fast forward. And we would not have a long, drawn out, you know, the promo with the DX Express. No problem there. And we had to say a lead pipe because if it was a sledgehammer, it would be pretty damn obvious who it was. So we got to make it look like who the hell would carry a lead pipe to attack Stone Cold Steve Austin. So at this point, you would have basically, you know, Austin comes back during SmackDown. I had no problem with that. That was a good pop-up. Give him a nice pop. Smack everybody's steel chair. Help The Rock win the title. Maybe even put the belt on... put the belt on Triple H, because Big Show would have had a very different first title run instead of that bullshit he had to go through. Mm-hmm. And Big Show would have been dragged through a cemetery on this dead dad. Because that was just horrible. So, of course, Unforgiven. We already said how we would do that. You know, I agree with you on that. So I have no problem with him. Let the matches do their thing. Then have a condensed version. Put everything like a mashup of all the cutaways that they had going on that night. Maybe at least get Steve Blackman to utter a syllable, because that man never said a fucking word. Maybe utter a syllable. At least say "ah, boom," then get stunned. Like, at least we know has sound.
Dude, so. The only time I remember Steve Blackman talking is when he had that like brief tag team with Al Snow and they were trying that cheesehead shit. Like, other than that, my man didn't say a word.
He did not. So after that, if we're going to book, if we're gonna end up booking, you know, we're gonna end up booking Rikishi to do this, we damn sure will make him say, "I did it for The Rock."
So, you would have had Rikishi be the one to hit him?
I would have Rikishi. I mean, if we're gonna do, if I had Rikishi do it,
okay.
If I had Rikishi do this, I would probably, instead of "I did it for The Rock and I did it for the people," because the fuck you got, fuck you do it for The Rock for? Like you said, he's already a multi-time champion. He's already the people's champion. just say, look, I want to be the top guy. And in order to be the top guy, I have to take out the top guy.
That's real.
Make him, if you're going to make him do it where it's, I did it for my damn self.
Versus, there you go.
I did it for The Rock.
There you go.
Like, and then you can build him up to be a badass heel.
Mm-hmm.
And you build him up to be a badass heel, and you know, as long as drawn out as this storyline was, he gets the heat, he gets the reactions. He still, it will be getting like second or third pops because people hate his ass at this point.
Mm-hmm.
And people will hate him because they legitimately hate him. Mm-hmm. Versus, I am sick of this bullshit. Stop insulting my fucking intelligence.
Mm-hmm.
So now you can actually build him up where you know, over time, he evolves back into a babyface, where he has a sight set on the title. Then you could probably even book him to even win the title from Kurt Angle, because then you have a rivalry with Kurt Angle, or you have a rivalry with Triple H, because you're now established as a bigger star, and you would be a dominant, either you'd be a dominant heel champion, or you turn babyface and you get the belt. Mm-hmm. So that's how I would have booked it. I would have booked it where, if Rikishi did this, he does this for his own personal gain. He's tired of being quote unquote held back. So he starts taking out the top guys in order to be the top guy.
That's real.
You know, I'm completely swerved. I didn't know you were gonna go there. You know what I mean? And for as long as, I mean, this happened damn near 21 years ago. I never would have thought that keeping Rikishi as that person would have been a possibility, but what you said made sense in a way, because real works in wrestling. When you're able to bring something that's real life, into a wrestling storyline, it makes it that much better. So if he's not doing it for The Rock and he's doing it for himself, like there's something personal he can bring into that, that he can open, you can open the wall and like, yo, you got me out here shaking my ass in the stall, treating me like a joke. You know what I mean? Or, you know, and go forward. Before that, you put a mask on me and call me the Sultan. Before that, you had me, you know, Junior Fatu. You know, he could have thrown in all his past gimmicks as reasons why he made this move, and use that to build that heat and add more to that storyline. So yeah, man, I feel what you're saying. Yeah. One of the things that always annoyed me about how things played out is that, you know, it was revealed that Rikishi did it. Austin completely watched him at No Mercy.
Right.
And then Rikishi never got a win as a heel. Let me just say that. not to say he didn't win a match. Like, if he had a big match, a pay-per-view match, he never got the win. You know what I mean? And even though you're going to see a heel lose, especially in WWE, it still matters, mm-hmm, that they win somehow. You know what I mean? Like, a lot of people don't realize, once it was revealed that Triple H was the culprit, they had one match. I believe it was at, God, it wasn't at, it was at Survivor Series. I just said it, duh. that match, I believe, ended in a no contest. I don't know what was the actual ending of that match, but I can't remember off the top of my head. But that match ended with Triple H, Austin, outside of the arena, Triple H in a vehicle trying to find Austin. Austin comes in another vehicle, lifts Triple H in the sky, and commits attempted murder on him too.
Right.
And then in their second match, 2 out of 3 falls at No Way Out, Triple H wins. So put it like this. Triple H was the culprit. He had 2 matches against Austin. Austin didn't win either one of them.
Yeah.
Austin technically didn't win his match against Rikishi. All this shit was pointless.
Every single bit of it.
You know what I mean?
Every single bit of it.
But if you can, I agree. Triple H couldn't have been in it. It had to be all about Rikishi if it was going to be Rikishi. Triple H didn't need the heat at that time because he had already gotten up to the top of the card. So he technically didn't need to take Austin out. You know what I mean? So what you said makes sense, bro. You shocked me. I did not think you were going to go with Rikishi. Did not. I thought you were going to go full on Triple H. Should have been Triple H from the start.
Yeah.
But yo, I like it, man.
Appreciate it.
All right. So for me, how I would have booked this storyline, I completely, totally agree with Dwayne. I would have took the car out. Murder in wrestling does not work. Murder in wrestling never makes sense. Rewind to 1995, 96, one of those. Halloween Havoc 95, I believe.
Mm-hmm.
The Giant versus Hulk Hogan. They had a, what was that, a monster mash thing before their actual match where Hulk Hogan threw the Giant off of a building.
Oh my God.
And I'm sorry, is you get thrown off of a building, you're dead. But no, the Giant came back that night and won the WCW title. You know, that is an example of murder not working in wrestling.
Great.
With Stone Cold Steve Austin, like Dwayne said earlier, that car was going not slow.
Yeah.
You could tell Austin had some acting chops in him because, you know, he protected himself the best way. I wouldn't have done that shit. Right. I'm sorry. Especially as a top guy. I could feel like if I was on like Gilbert status, where I feel like I gotta do this to keep my job.
Right.
But me, Stone Cold Steve Austin, man, you hit me with no fucking car.
Right.
Get out of here. So I agree with Dwayne. If I was going to injure Stone Cold Steve Austin and show that prior to him being out, I would have did it with another object. Personally, for me, I would just say the dude was hurt and couldn't compete.
Yeah.
Because I believe, you know what I mean? That at that point in 1999, an announcement like that's not going to hurt Stone Cold Steve Austin. We've seen Stone Cold Steve Austin for over 3 years now in this persona.
Mm-hmm.
If he can't go, we know something is up.
Right.
But I digress. So, just like you, I'm cool with all the backlash stuff. I think that was a good way to bring him back and just kind of whet the appetite a little bit, build up anticipation for his full-time return. When we get to Unforgiven, I would keep it the same of what I was talking about earlier. A few backstage segments, get him mixed in with some people, come out, he can still do the stunners, nice little treat for the crowd. But I think I would have revealed who did it the very next night on Raw. We wasting no time here. We not dragging it out for weeks and weeks and weeks. Nah. We gonna start this thing off right.
Yeah.
All right. So I've always been the biggest proponent of the Rikishi thing not working because Rikishi wasn't a member of the active roster at that time. So what I'm looking at is who's on the active roster at this point in time who could benefit from being that person. Like, you could, if you were thinking about turning the Rock heel, you could do the Rock, but the Rock didn't need this. You could have did Triple H. Triple H is the easy pick.
Yeah.
And so much of what is wrong with wrestling right now is that we always go with what's easy. We never think outside the box. So I wouldn't have done Triple H for that very reason. I would look to somebody fresh, somebody who's on the roster, who we hadn't seen Stone Cold rub up against up at this point.
Yeah.
My guy would have been the person who debuted at the Survivor Series the night Austin got hit. We don't correlate these two things often. Mm-hmm. But to me, Kurt Angle would have been the perfect person to take out Stone Cold Steve Austin.
I like that.
Kurt Angle was coming on like that. That was his debut night against Sean Stasiak. Lord Jesus, help Sean Stasiak.
Wow.
Wherever he is, bless that poor child. He never had it.
He's like a doctor now.
Yeah, like a foot doctor or some shit like that.
Oh God, he's a Snitsky. Jesus Christ.
Oh no, he ain't wrestling. So thank you God for that.
Right.
No more meat. You remember when he was meat?
Oh my God, that is so true. Oh.
Kurt Angle, people. Kurt Angle made his debut at that Survivor Series that Stone Cold Steve Austin got hit with the car. Would have been perfect. On Kurt Angle's first night, he takes out the top dog. From that night on, what did we see Kurt Angle do? Just ascend. He wins his first match, goes on an undefeated streak. He's a European champion, intercontinental champion. What did he call it? The Eurocontinental champion?
Oh, God.
He had them both.
Yeah.
Had both the titles. Dropped those in a great WrestleMania match against Chris Jericho and Chris Benoit. I would advise people to go back and watch that match, WrestleMania 2000, triple threat match, Angle, Benoit, Jericho. Goes on to
side note.
Win. What'd you say?
Side note. Stasiak is a chiropractor. Thank you.
Chiropractor. Hey, there you go. So not messing with feet.
He works on backs and not feet. Thank you, Jesus. Okay. I'm happy to hear that now. Okay.
Excuse me. Angle loses those two straps at Mania, goes on a couple months later, wins the King of the Ring. I think it would have been good to actually see him win the WWF championship a little early before Stone Cold comes back. Because Austin's already back when he wins the title. But if Angle is already the WWF champion when Austin comes back, man, that's full circle.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I mean? And when Austin is set to come back, I've heard Pritchard and others say that the plan was always WrestleMania, Austin, Rock.
Yeah.
It would have been nice to, before we got to that point, to have a long feud between Austin and Kurt Angle. Can you imagine the matches that we could have got out of that.
Classics. Classics.
Like, if you hit them up with three pay-per-views, say, you know, Austin comes back and what was it? We said it was Unforgiven?
Yeah.
Austin comes back at Unforgiven. Next night on Raw, we find out that it was Angle that hit Stone Cold Steve Austin, or injured Stone Cold Steve Austin.
Mm-hmm.
Angle and Austin have matches at subsequent pay-per-views. So they have a match at
No Mercy.
No Mercy, a match at Survivor Series, and then a Hell in a Cell match to end it all at Armageddon.
Okay.
Would have been perfect. And then we wouldn't have had to see that shit 6-man Hell in a Cell match.
Where Rikishi falls off the cage.
Yes. That's the only thing you remember from that Hell in a Cell.
Basically, yeah. Yeah.
To me, especially like if we're building Angle to be what he ultimately became, man, that would have helped him out tremendously.
Mm-hmm.
If Angle is the person, it also allows WWF to do what they were trying to do with Triple H before Austin came back. If you remember, before Austin comes back, Triple H is in a feud with Kurt Angle and a side feud with The Rock.
Yeah.
But it's more Kurt Angle because they're feuding over Stephanie. That feud started off as two heels versus each other. Each week, more and more, the crowd turn to Triple H's favor.
Mm-hmm.
And you started to see Triple H display more babyface characteristics. And the crowd was playing it. Every time Triple H's music hit, the crowd was cheering more. Like, they were building, and I've even heard, you know, I've heard this, they were building a babyface turn for Triple H. But when this Austin shit turned bad, nah, we gotta get Triple H in here to save this shit, to put a band. So now we automatically turn off Triple H and turn him heel again because it's easy. But you lose all on opportunity with that. Because with that WrestleMania match, you could have easily turned either Austin or The Rock. Or you could have went. I know me and Dwayne are not fans of either one of these individuals. You could have went Hulk Hogan Ultimate Warrior style. Did the babyface thing and kept them babyface. I don't care what you would have did against Austin and Rock at WrestleMania. But I think it would have set up both Triple H and Kurt Angle better. You know what I mean? Yeah. What did Triple H, that was the first match that he had with The Undertaker.
Mm-hmm.
See, and here's the deal.
For the title.
This goes back to what I was saying earlier about how Triple H and Austin ended their feud.
Yeah.
One match ended in a no contest. The other one, Triple H won. The month before, Austin wins the Royal Rumble to get the shot at WrestleMania, right?
Right.
Then at No Mercy, Triple H beats Austin in a 2 out of 3 falls match. Mm-hmm. Austin still hasn't won a match on pay-per-view since he's been back outside of the Royal Rumble. But he gets the Mania shot. Triple H even comes out on Raw and says, hey, I beat the person who won the Royal Rumble twice. I should get the shot.
Right.
But nah. Undertaker comes out, and this is no slight to the Undertaker, because they told Undertaker to do this, and this was before the streak was even a thing.
Right.
Undertaker came out with the whole, "You haven't beat me yet," and Triple H goes, "Well, yeah, I haven't beat you. Okay, let's do it." That made Triple H look stupid.
Right.
And then I can't even look up. I don't even remember what Kurt Angle did at WrestleMania 17.
Oh, wasn't this the one that was like X7?
Yeah, that was X7. I'm pulling it up right now. Dude, that was so stupid. Didn't they do that three times? They did X7, X8, and X9.
Yeah.
Something shit like that.
Trash, and trash.
Okay. Kurt Angle defeated Chris Benoit in a one-on-one match. But I'm like,
the name for you.
Like, why though? Like, I don't even remember them feuding. Like, I'm trying to like look up some background information on.
I'm doing the same exact thing.
Like, there's nothing on why Kurt Angle just ended up pairing. WrestleMania 17 is one of the greatest WrestleManias of all time.
Mm-hmm.
No doubt. I think if you, and it's a show that we're going to review one day, we're going to talk about.
Mm-hmm.
But in the spirit of how we would have booked this storyline, I think how I would have booked it would have affected what people did at WrestleMania and effectively made WrestleMania even bigger than what it was. I could see Kurt Angle being the guy that hit Austin, but then Austin, they have this great feud. It ends. Austin wins the Royal Rumble. He goes on to face The Rock at WrestleMania. Triple H stays on that path of being a babyface. What if he comes into that WrestleMania season and is red hot as a babyface, and he's facing a heel Kurt Angle? What if you shift that feud that they had in late 99 to early 2000? You get a Mania match out of that. Then you ask, well, what do Undertaker do? What does Chris Benoit do? You put them motherfuckers together.
Right.
Undertaker versus Chris Benoit.
Those.
Who the hell wouldn't want to see Undertaker or Chris Benoit just beat the shit out of each other?
At that time, that would have been pure gold.
Like, I don't even remember an Undertaker-Chris Benoit match.
I think this one doesn't never got a chance to happen.
You know what I mean? Like, I think you shift those two opponents just by simply booking this one storyline better.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's one of those. Yeah, it's one of those things where I think that this whole you could win so many different ways with this, and I think that's the frustrating part, because all the ways that it could have went, it did not go because it went down this horrible path, and the end result, and even 21 years after the fact, it's still horrible.
It's still horrible. It's still a joke. Like, when I say a catchphrase or, you know, recite a famous promo, you know, normally we're honoring that. Anytime anybody says, "I did it for The Rock, I did it for the people," it's a joke.
Mm-hmm.
We making fun of it. We not taking it seriously because this storyline was a joke. You can look up tons of wrestling articles. Like, this made sense to nobody. I've seen where people have called this one of the missed opportunities, one of the biggest missed opportunities that WWF has had, and they've had a lot. But I tend to agree. I think there's so much that you could have got out of this.
Mm-hmm.
And they just let it fall by the wayside.
Yeah. Yeah.
All right. Well, dude, I think before we get out of here, we're going to shake this bullshit off.
Right.
And I feel like we got some more bullshit to talk about. So, if you joined us last time, we like to end the podcast by doing a segment called Hot Takes. Hot Takes is where we give ourselves space to talk about one thing that's currently going on in the business that we really like, or something that's really bugging the shit out of us. So, Dwayne, turn it over to you, bro. What's your hot take for the week?
Hot take for the week. I hate to say this.
Nah, say it.
But I'm going to say it anyway.
Go on.
I'm kind of wondering if The Fiend is getting a little stale.
Ooh. Okay.
I am all for the monster heel. I'm all for the dominance. But it seems like this character is getting one-dimensioned. And I don't know if it's... It definitely Wyndham. Because Wyndham is one of the most creative minds I've seen in a long time. But I think what they're writing for Bray is... It just seems like there's nothing. There's, you go in, you put the scary mask on, you whoop ass. That's it. And it's like this indestructible force, which is fine. I'm all for it. Like, it transforms you into something that is hard to stop. But I don't know. It's just not the same. Maybe if I actually give it, you know, more of a shot, I might come around. But as of right now, nah.
I feel it. I agree with you to an extent. Yeah. Like, I think one thing that's throwing people off is that he needs to be a little bit more dominant than he is. His matches are too long to me.
Right.
I think that he should have been out here squashing folks.
Right. Either make him dominant or make him dominant so people don't want to face him for the title.
Mm-hmm.
Or scrap it.
Yeah. I feel it.
It's one or the other. It's none in between on this one.
All right.
All right. What's about yours?
I know WWE about to fuck up WrestleMania.
And it's 7 weeks away. Well, not even 7 weeks. It's 7.5 weeks away.
So I don't know if we're going to drop this before the Rumble or right after the Rumble, but I just feel it in my spirit that WWE is gonna fuck up the Rumble, thereby fucking up WrestleMania.
With the Brock being number one?
Actually, no. I like that.
Okay.
I don't expect Brock to win.
Right.
I expect more so. Or I don't want to say what I expect. I see the Rumble potentially setting up whoever he's going to face at WrestleMania.
Yeah, I see that too.
Like, I can see whoever ends up taking him out, like, that's the person that will be matched up against Brock. Because one thing that we already know, there's nobody on Raw that's going to win the Men's Royal Rumble.
No.
Look, if this thing comes out, I don't care when this podcast we release it. If Roman Reigns don't win the Rumble, I'll come back here and apologize to WWE. But I just feel it in my spirit. They've been shoving this whole Roman Reigns, Baron Corbin thing down our throats for so long. You can tell they're building Roman up to get him back to the top.
Mm-hmm.
To be the person who takes down Bray. Who takes down the Fiend. Which is going to piss me off even more, because if you checked out our first episode covering the Streak, I said I would have booked the Streak to end against Bray Wyatt.
You did. We can run the tape. You did.
Bray Wyatt has never had a big match win. Now, he won the WWE Championship before. But let's be real. They literally treated him like a transition champion to get the title on Randy Orton.
Basically, because nobody wanted to see who was Cena the champ at the time? Yeah. When he won in the Elimination Chamber? Yeah, mm-hmm. He was. Yeah, because nobody wants to see Cena and Orton for the 80,000th, 730th, and 2.6 millionth time.
So this is my hot take, bro. WWE, when are you going to learn?
Cut the shit.
I don't have a problem with Roman Reigns. My problem is that you live by giving the fans what they want, but you never give the fans what they want. Now, yes, there are vocal fans that do not want Roman Reigns to be the guy. What's wrong with that? Back in the day, there's plenty of people that the fans didn't want to be the guy in WCW or WWF. You listen in. What's so hard about listening now? Like, are fans going to have to hijack shows again? Like, do you want to risk ruining this WrestleMania? Do you really think that if you put Roman Reigns up against Bray Wyatt in front of a WrestleMania crowd and Roman wins, that crowd won't shit all over that match?
Because they will.
I predict this. If Roman Reigns faces the Fiend Bray Wyatt for the WWE Championship, excuse me, for the Universal Championship at WrestleMania, I predict that the vocal reaction to this match will be worse than Royal Rumble in Philly when Roman Reigns won. That's my prediction. So this is my hot take. My hot take is my feeling, my belief that WWE is about to fuck up WrestleMania.
Mm-hmm.
And prove once again why they do not listen to their fans. I'm going to put an asterisk on that. Triple H, shout out to you, because I feel like you listen to the fans, bro, because NXT is stellar. So is NXT UK. But I'm going to tell you like this. This is my hot take side note.
Mm-hmm.
We about to get off this and watch AEW and NXT for tonight.
Mm-hmm.
I love them both. Really exciting time on Wednesday nights. I alternate weeks that I watch either show live. If Dynamite was on Monday nights versus Raw, or on Friday nights versus SmackDown, I would never watch Raw or SmackDown live.
Right.
Listen to your fans, WWE. It's wrestling. Give us what we want. And I promise you, things will turn around. That's all I got to say, bro.
Mm-hmm.
All right. Well, that's going to wrap us up for episode 2 of Hill Heat. Once again, I'm your man, Sean, the Shogun Shaolin. You can follow me on Twitter. You can follow Dwayne on his many Twitter accounts.
I only have two.
He only has two. The Libra icon. And actually, Dwayne, follow the show on Twitter as well, at Heel Heat Pod. Join us next time. I can't believe I'm doing this, but we're going to do our first watch along episode. We're going to watch the June 5th, 1998 episode of WCW Thunder. I know that date doesn't stick out, but this is the episode after the formation of the New World Order Wolfpack. All the red and black in their glory, plus the debut of Tomato Face Sting. I feel bad, bro. I'm such a NWA, WCW guy, and we're going to spend our first episode covering something WCW, and I'm going to shit all on this, bro.
I'm here for it.
And mind you, this will be my first time watching a WCW Thunder on the WWE Network. I have never hit play on an episode of Thunder. I mean, hell, why would I? To watch David Arquette win the title? Who
wants to
do that?
That's just
crazy. All right, guys. You can catch us on Mondays and Fridays. We'll try to tweet along with the WrestleCast fam on our show account. Tweets that end in S are mine. Tweets that end with D are Dwayne. So if we say something, please feel free to direct your heat at whoever sent the tweet.
And guess what? We don't give a fuck if you like it
so
or not.
What?
So y'all can kiss my, I'm going to tell y'all in advance.
All right, y'all. We're out of here. Catch us next time on Hill Heat, brought to you by the CSPN.
Later.